How do we help clients tolerate the shame that they've internalized? When a client experiences repeated shame, it can create neural patterns that promote core feelings of unworthiness. But Dr. Rick Hansen suggests a practical way to override these shame patterns while helping to build new resources of self-worth.
It is said that guilt is, I did something bad. Shame is, I am bad. So the problem with shame, of course, is it's so globalized, whereas guilt, you know, for people with a conscience, you know, not sociopaths, you know, people who have some kind of moral feeling, including, you know, pro-social intentions related to social justice very broadly, you know, there's a place for that. I call it the wince of healthy remorse. I think about times when our children were young where, you know, honestly, even now, I just think about it, I'm embarrassed and comfortable, like, you know, even though I'm pretty mellow, I lost my cool. Then I saw that look of kind of shock and fear on the face of our son or daughter, and I never want to go there again. You know, there's a place for internalizing that, but a little bit of that really goes a long way. So for me, that's distinct from unhealthy pathological shame, which includes, as I've said earlier, just feelings of inadequacy, I can speak quite from personal experience here, being, you know, not worthy, second tier, damaged goods, as my dad who grew up on a ranch would put it, feeling like the runt of the litter. And so that's not good for us. Okay, so what do we do about it? One, I think it's important, weirdly enough, to resource people so they can tolerate healthy guilt, healthy remorse. And resourcing there has to do with building of traits inside ourselves of, you know, self-compassion, a sense of reasonable perspective on how big a deal that was. Was it a misdemeanor or a felony? How terrible was that event? And being able to see it clearly, and also being able to access large areas inside, which will take me to my second point, where you feel like a good person anyway. Okay, I did bad there. Something, you know, was bad in me that came forward, but it's in the larger context of all these other things about me, all these other tiles, if you will, in the larger mosaic of who I am, all these other qualities that are really okay, really good. Also, in terms of tolerating healthy remorse, it helps, as you know, to have the internalization of many experiences of being seen, loved, liked, appreciated, included, respected by others, because as a social emotion, shame is very antidoted by and compensated for with and managed through social experiences that come in from the outside. I don't think that is the only source of healthy self-worth, and I think people vary in their temperament. Some people are much more extroverted. For them, the external provision of healthy narcissistic supplies, they're called, that you draw upon to build up a strong internal sense of worth. For them, that's a major pathway, but it's not the only pathway. Some people who are by their nature quite extroverted highly emphasize, if not exclusively emphasize and even privilege, the external sources of healthy self-worth. But I don't think they're the only sources. And for many people in the world, including many introverts like me, a major source of healthy self-worth has been independent of the social field. Others were just not relevant. It was about my relationship with the object world, including nature, outdoors, being skillful, being competent, being capable, and also internal processes of self-recognition that were not dependent upon others. My point about that is not to make one better or worse, but just to, as a kind of diversity, to include all types, and to make a note in general that I try to remember as a writer myself, not to make our own way of being, our own personality or psychology, some kind of general rule for all humankind. You know, there are many pathways to being a healthy, happy, contributing, loving person. To that, I'll talk about a particular person. So I've already talked about the internalization repeatedly of opportunities, you know, 5, 10, 30 seconds at a time, opportunities to feel of worth. You know, that externally you are seen or included or appreciated or liked or loved, and internally referenced experiences that don't have to do with other people or even an inner audience in which you recognize your own goodness or tap in to that deep nature, I think, in every being, even the nuttiest of us all, you know, that deep nature that is fundamentally, you know, peaceful, radiant, loving, and wise. All right. So in addition to that internalization process, and I should mention that one of the more powerful aspects of that, which I'll illustrate with this particular client, I'll call John. There you go, John. It's this idea, I call it linking. It's a very common method in ordinary life as well as in psychotherapy where we pair or we hold two things in awareness at once. So I'll tell you about John. So John experienced a lot of neglect. And it's interesting that shame can develop as well as other, I'll call them psychopathologies loosely, through the absence of the good, not just the presence of the bad. Often it's unfortunately a double whammy for people, but in many cases, neglect, emotional neglect. Think about these children, classic, you know, or, you know, orphanage stories, particularly, you know, around the world, where they're not beaten, but these infants, toddlers, preschoolers, and young children are just ignored. They're not seen, they're not touched, they're not spoken with, they're not responded to. And inside that, a person can acquire over time this repeated experience that I'm not good enough to matter enough for anyone to see me, or for my mom to see me, or my mom to come when I call, or my dad to see me. There's something wrong with me deep down inside that I don't matter. I don't even exist for other people. You know, it's a kind of preemptive shunning, if you will, delivered in early childhood or later childhood to people. And that's what happened for him. He was very neglected. So as an adult, even though I'll kind of disguise the details, he was very successful in his profession as a professional kind of person. Intellectually, he knew that he was very competent and he got excellent work reviews and he had a staff and people appreciated him and so forth. Deep down in his core, he didn't feel worth loving. And for him, it was particularly loaded as a heterosexual man, being ignored by his mother, and also it was particularly loaded on women. The women just wouldn't see him, wouldn't care about him in various ways. He imagined erroneously, delusionally actually, that there were defective things about him visually that would just be appalling to people and turn them off, even though factually he was a very, very appealing, physically as a person. So all that was in his mind. So what we worked on is this pathway that, again, I'm sure many therapists work on, where you're looking for some kind of deconsolidation of the past learning through a disconfirming mismatch between your expectation or view. In his case, no one wants me, no one will see me, I'm really ugly, I'm actually disgusting to see or be with. You know, no one would ever want to touch me. So to look for experiences that are a mismatch for that deep learning. Think of it as a kind of learning. So he learned in his own way. He acquired in his own way trait inadequacy, trait ugliness inside. He felt ugly inside. And so what we had to help him do was using, you know, a real good cutting edge information now in neuropsychology, we wanted to surface that old material so that it was then in a more labile or dynamic or vulnerable state. And so then before it got reconsolidated back down the memory hole, you know, we wanted to associate it with neurons that fire together, wire together. We wanted to associate this old learned material with new disconfirming mismatch evidence of various kinds that was contradictory to it. So it would get destabilized. And then with repetition, you know, once in a while you get that million-dollar white light moment, bingo, you know, and you really pull the tip of the root, you're free of that whole neurotic package. But usually it's long, slow grind, as you well know. But again and again and again, it adds up. So we look for disconfirming experiences. So specifically in the therapy, I would provide those disconfirming experiences myself. You know, I would see him, I would see the good in him, and I would look for times when he was surfacing that old crud, because it's hard to get at unless it's surfaced in consciousness. If you talk about it intellectually, that's okay, but that's maybe a start, but it's not the end of the process. You've got to get at it somatically and affectively. He had to feel it in the room, so we had to resource him to tolerate feeling it in the first place. And then in the second stage of the therapy, when he could tolerate it and would start to actually feel it live in the room, then there were opportunities for me to be disconfirming and then to help him internalize those mismatch experiences, take in the good, install them inside himself, take the extra 10, 20, 30 seconds to really feel that that reverberation of disconfirmation and inside himself and the internalization of healthy experiences. But I have a liability. I'm a guy. You know, I'm not the perfect antidote for his experiences. So then we would talk a lot about experiences for him that started actually with the wives of his friends who were very safe for him because there was no possibility of anything happening. And they were very nurturing, and he could not deny that they really liked him. They were kind to him. You know, they were motherly, frankly, with him as someone roughly of their own age. And he had a chance. So in the therapy, we would talk about those experiences and move from narrating the event, you know, which he would tend to go to, of course, but try to draw him into what he felt then or what he could feel now, bringing it up again. And then bingo, we had the opportunity, holding the positive then in mind of this nurturing woman, bringing up that old crud where he felt like a three-year-old locked in the closet for hours, just left out and ignored, so that the positive could actually go into and penetrate and soothe the knees and replace the negative. And then as he progressed and he became able to have a girlfriend, which was a major step for him, then bingo, we really had lots of opportunities to pull up the experience that she found him attractive. She went out of her way to be with him. She's was a real good, sane, steady person for him, a legitimate object to develop a secure attachment relationship with. And then again and again and again, we would take in those experiences, both as themselves, those beneficial experiences with her, but particularly through linking him being aware of both that positive and the negative at the same time, so he could have a mismatch experience and really radically over time, erase that old material.
As Rick shared, an important part of this process is resourcing your clients to tolerate their past feelings. To get another take on this, here's Dr. Kelly McGonigal and Dr. Ron Siegel.
What Jung actually had pointed out in a great deal of detail over many years, because Jung was pretty introverted and he lived in a society that valued extroversion. And he said that, you know, the pathways to well-being are really different if you're an introvert. And it becomes very interesting when we're working with people therapeutically, whether we see, you know, somebody's introversion as pathology or see it simply as a difference. For example, if the teenager wants to stay home on Saturday night and read a book or write poetry instead of going to the party, there's a sort of assumption in the high school world that, oh, well, you know, they're socially anxious. They don't use that word, but they, you know, they say they're not a cool kid or that sort of thing. And therapists can kind of collude with this sort of extroverted bias that says social contact is the way to go, especially as we emphasize the importance of connection. But connection doesn't have to be interpersonal social connection. It can be a felt connection, and that could be a spiritual connection, you know, whether with nature or God or art or beauty. It could be a connection to an inner journey having to do with meditation, poetry, or dare I say it, mind-altering drugs that create mythic journeys inside for people. Or it could be other kinds of mythic exploration, you know, vision quests, this sort of thing. And I think it's we as therapists need to consider, so what might the resourcing be for this individual, especially if this individual has a somewhat different style, introversion or extroversion wise, than we do, or comes from a different cultural background? Because there may be inner forms of air and light that are different from the social forms of air and light.
You know, it's funny when I agree with all of that. And when I was thinking about what it means to resource someone to deal with shame, I had such a much more micro, like in the moment of shame, resourcing kind of mindset. So I just wanted to say that, you know, everything that you were describing, the possible social resourcing, the being in nature, I was thinking that we really need to teach attention redeployment for moments of shame, that all of these things that they it's not just that you do them in life so that you have resources, or that you sort of do them in some in-depth way for hours to heal from shame, but like in this moment with your shame, go outside where there is a blue sky you can see, or in this moment of shame, make eye contact with someone, you know, despite every inclination not to, that there's a moment-to-moment version of this that has to be taught and explained so that you can redirect your attention to that bigger than self connection in moments of shame.
We heard several ways to resource clients to better help them deal with shame. In the next module, we'll look at how to work with the shame that poisons relationships. I'll see you there.